This is the Football Japan Minute Cast. I'm Ben Mabley, still in Yokohama, with the Japanese football season now finally running down. The J-League is over for another year. The Club World Cup is finished too, or at least will be by the time you hear this. And there's just the last couple of rounds of the Emperor's Cup to go before everyone packs their boots away until spring. Now, regular listeners will know that the name Minutecast is a bit of a misnomer, as we've gradually extended the weekly roundups to more like 5 or 6 minutes now. But we're going to try something different again today. This one is a special feature-length edition just before Christmas, looking back on the whole of 2011. And I've very kindly been joined by two other Japan-based European football writers for the occasion. Okay, it's my privilege today to be joined by a freelance writer with Shukan Sakka magazine, that's weekly soccer magazine here in Japan, and the Daily Yomiuri. One of the freshest faces, the more prolific writers among the guys in the foreigner community here in Japan, perhaps the Shinji Kagawa of the foreigner writing world, perhaps Hiroki Sakai, I don't know. Anyway, it's Sean Carroll. Sean Carroll, thanks for joining us today.
No problem.
How are you doing? You okay?
I'm good, thank you for the introduction.
That's my pleasure.
Very comprehensive.
Yeah, it took me ages to think it up. And on my right, at the opposite end of the spectrum, the stylish veteran, perhaps the King Kazu of the foreigner writing community here. It's Goal.com, managing editor for the whole of Asia. It's his continent, it's Cesare Polenghe.
Thanks very much. Thanks for the comparison. No. I take it as a compliment.
Yeah? Do you like King Kazu?
I sort of, we grew up together.
You grew up together?
In a way.
In Brazil?
Nope. the interesting thing is, I came to Japan when he went to Italy, which is actually my home country. So
I don't think our listeners would have guessed that from your accent.
No. Was it a cultural exchange? Did he stay with your family?
No. I just, I had to, follow his...
Well, anyway, we're all in Yokohama for the Club
just
World
Cup. You have to be very careful when you speak about Kazu in Japan.
Yeah.
Because it's King Kazu.
Because he is the king. Yeah.
Is it like Mohammed? You have to add the...
You can have a fatwa, actually. If you say the wrong thing about Kazu, you can
be banned. Peace be upon
him. It's true. Well, we'll do our best not to say the wrong thing about you, since I've just compared the two of you. We're all in Yokohama for the Club World Cup. It will be all finished by the time this goes on online, so we won't dwell on it too much. Yesterday we were all at Barcelona against Al Sadd. Was that an enjoyable experience for you guys?
Were we there? I forgot yesterday what happened.
Yeah.
I think there was a football game.
It was a practice game.
Something. Training.
Barcelona played with this very good willing team from somewhere in the Middle East. They were kind of clumsy, and they just... Barcelona best players actually got a bad injury.
Yeah, that's
which
the top
is the biggest
story,
news,
apparently.
Definitely the top story.
Yeah.
Well, I think it should be for any other club, if a player that good gets injured. But Barcelona is not any other club.
No, well, it's more than a club.
Exactly.
Mexican club.
And they had what? Cesc and Xavi.
Yeah.
And Piqué.
Yeah.
On the bench.
Yeah.
They probably
didn't even need to bring them on.
No, they didn't.
You just let. Oh, so you have tonight off. So I think, it's a big loss.
It was very unfortunate.
It was, but, and Spain haven't got any other strikers, I don't think, now.
No, really. I don't think so. Well, it's a lifeline for Fernando Torres, perhaps, because... the talk was that he was going to be dropped from the Spain squad, replaced by Soldado, and now maybe there's room for them both. I don't know. But...
Well, anyway, the most excitement clearly came from Kashiwa Reysol, I think.
Yeah, exactly. We're all based in Japan. We're all here basically to watch Kashiwa Reysol. So, have you rated their performance in the tournament? Of course, they were knocked out 2 days ago by Santos in a 3-1 defeat, but they came through two rounds before then, two pretty impressive victories.
I think they were very good. I think, it was kind of nice to see them graduating, to the next level game after game. And as somebody who's been following Japanese football for almost two decades, it was great to see a Japanese team to play up to this level. And I think that the gap is not as wide as it used to be between Japanese teams and South American or European teams, even at a club level. We sort of verified that. So good job, Reysol.
Yeah, sure.
They did really well.
Yeah.
But their first game was against... a pub team.
Yeah, I suppose. So Auckland City, well, Auckland City, they
and I mean, well. To be fair, they were playing a pub team, but they were kind of hungover themselves.
Yeah,
and their coach said, so it was kind of like...
This is true. Clashy did go into the Club World Cup just 5 days after clinching their place at the tournament by winning the J-League.
Right, and that was the first international game ever.
Never played... Well, I mean, we'll talk about Clashy's title triumph later, but yeah, they never played in the Asian Champions League.
Never.
This was their first international match. And Nelsinho Baptista said in his press conference, I think, after the Santos game, that he was satisfied, as much as anything, with the fact that they'd shown how much Japanese football had developed. I mean, Baptista first came here as manager of Rudy Kawasaki in 1995, and he said now the Japanese players, particularly the young players, have shown so much improvement. So does this mean that the Club World Cup is an important competition? How do we evaluate this competition? Sean is smiling opposite me here.
I think there are good aspects in that if you get to the semi-final, they played against Santos. They were never going to beat Santos until the Brazilians took a bit of a siesta in the second half and relaxed. So I think it's good to have that one-off experience, but I still think the tournament is a waste of time. And everybody knew that Santos were going to play Barcelona in the final, and Santos are going to play Barcelona in the final. So yeah, it's good experience, and it raises the profile for Kashiwa, and it gives the players that belief, especially people like Saka, who had such a good game. Now he knows he can play against these players. And
but long term, isn't this the point? I mean, we knew the Club World Cup has only been going in its current guise for 6 years now, and we all knew at first that was the seventh edition, I suppose. We all knew at the beginning that the Asian teams and the African teams and particularly the Oceanian teams were going to be somewhere behind the South Americans and the Europeans. But at the same time, no one in Japan used to care too much about the AFC Champions League, and now suddenly, hang on a sec, if we win that, we can get to play against a top European team. So when Urawa won the AFC Champions League in 2007, they got to play Milan. That raised their profile. It then inspired other Japanese clubs to say, look, I want a bit of that action as well. And then...
Right. As a matter of fact, you know, like, when I was speaking with Gamba players, you know, like, who missed the title by a few points, you know, it seems like the main regret wasn't that much that they didn't win the title, that they couldn't get a chance to play in this tournament. I can tell that for sure, for the Japanese team, it is an interesting, it's a cool thing, it's a great experience for them. And for all these players, it's, you know, like the in the time of their life, just playing, you know, like in this competition against Santos, eventually, you know, it could have been against Barcelona, depending on the draft. I think it was definitely, for us, from a Japanese perspective, it's great to have this, I think.
Sure.
But that's not the point of football. To just say you played against this player, I got this guy's shirt. It should be, it's the Club World Cup. So really, every team should be the best team from the whole continent.
But see,
they should be on a kind of similar level.
I agree. But the point is this. If Kashiwa Reysol would have played as Alsat played yesterday against Barcelona, then I would say, you know, like, screw it. It was a waste of time. It was ridiculous. It's just exactly as you say, for the guys to get the shirt. But I really think that Kashiwa Reysol played a good game against Santos. I really think that, you know, if it would have, with a little bit more of luck, and, you know, they could have almost tied the game, you know, like it was 2-1, it was very close, they were having chances.
And even a 3-1, Sauer hit the post, but then missed a sitter, you know.
And I don't think that Santos was letting him do that on purpose, because, you know, why would he do that?
But it wasn't on purpose, but they clearly went in at half time and they felt like they'd won it. Maybe they were a bit unprofessional.
I think
against Barcelona, it's going to be a really good game, because Santos, as shown by the number of fans they've got here, they really want to win this tournament. To them, it means something. Maybe to Barcelona, everyone knows Barcelona is the best team. If they win or lose, they're the best team in the world. We all know that.
Yeah.
Actually,
but for Santos to win it, and I think it's going to be a really good game.
Actually, yesterday I was speaking with a Brazilian reporter who said, in a mix zone while we were waiting for the players, he said that Santos has been eyeing this game against Barcelona for 6 months. And he's studying them game after game, you know, like moment after moment.
It's always seems to be the way for the Copa Libertadores winners. And that's why it was such a huge shock for Internacional of Brazil last year when they went out in the semi-finals. But then, looking back at the tournament as a whole, should we not be taking the long-term perspective? Whereas for now, since we're only 6 years in, 7 years into the Club World Cup era, it's okay for Kashiwa, for Alsad, to just have the experience of playing against the top European South American teams. But then give it another 10, 20 years, it's not going to be enough to just play against them, because lots of teams will have done that before. They will now want to compete against them and beat them. Like Mazembe beating Internacional last year. Surely they can't expect to be at a level where they can beat them now, but if they have these opportunities, it stimulates continental competition, domestic competition.
But what stimulates it is money. The best South American players play in Europe. The best Asian players play in Europe. So, yeah, like, eventually the Japanese clubs will get bored and, okay, yeah, we get to play this team, but we played them 2 years ago and I already have this guy's shirt. And it's a case of, like Santos are doing now, they've kept Neymar. And there were loads of companies and the government, I think, even helped out to fund the fact they could keep him there because he's such an attraction. And he said, yeah, I'll be here till the World Cup. I'm staying in this club.
Sure.
And they need to somehow, FIFA needs, I think, to step in. And the money is getting out of control. It has been for ages and it keeps seeming like it's going to calm down. But if you can get it to a point where, yeah, the Asian clubs can also attract not just players at the end of their career, like Anelka now in China, and, okay, he wants one last payday and he can clearly do well in that league. If you can get it so that the African clubs and the Asian clubs also can either keep their best players, because Japan and South Korea and Australia, their level is going up. If these countries can keep their best players, so it's a case of, yeah, you've got the Asian champions and it's the best players in Asia playing the European champions, which is the best players in Europe. Then I agree, yeah, it can become a really worthwhile competition. But now there's talk of, yeah, Sakai excelled against Santos, so the talk afterwards was, oh, is Santos going to buy Sakai?
Hmm. Well, I think, you know, it used to be like the Intercontinental Cup, right, the Toyota Cup. It's just the South American team and the European team. It's more or less still the same. They just added a little bit of this carnival before with people from all over the world, and of course more and more involved. But I like to look at the positive side of it. For example, I'm having a lot of fun, you know, like at every game, speaking with people from all over the world, speaking, you know, with journalists from Brazil, from Spain, and so I suppose that for the fans, for the players, of course, for us, it's overall a positive thing. Now the value it has is just is debatable, and of course there's a lot of money involved. But overall, for me, just working at this tournament has been a lot of fun. So I'm enjoying it. I'm totally not against it.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, not that I wish to copy a certain other famous English language football podcast too directly, but I am serving as producer Ben today, and I'm hearing in my ear that this is going to be enough for the first section, so we'll have a little musical interlude and then we'll come back for a talk on the 2011 J-League season. Okay, part two, J-League, that's what we're all here. Kashiwa Reysol. Let's just go over this achievement again. Second division champions, 12 months later, they've won the title, they've beaten everybody. It's just astonishing.
Yeah, it was astonishing. It was unexpected until it actually happened. For sure, Stojkovic didn't expect it.
No, he didn't.
We spoke with him too.
We'll get onto that in a minute, but I mean, they tore away at the start of the season, and it looked like one of these things that's nice while it lasts. But they're there at the end. They win the title, three-way title race on the last day of the season, and they take it. I mean, how have they done it, Sean?
Actually, I know the answer to this.
You know the answer. Yes, yeah. That's good.
I was speaking to Nelsinho yesterday. He told me.
Okay.
I have no idea how they did it. I think partly the continuity helped. Often when teams come up, they try and buy in players who've got experience in J1, these experienced veteran players who basically have got experience getting relegated or playing for mediocre teams, and they didn't really do that. They kept the same core. They brought in people like Jorge Wagner, who've got this experience in better leagues in Brazil, and they didn't really veer off their game plan. They did similar to Nagoya last year. There were a few times with Nagoya, I think last season when they won the championship, they lost, I think, 4-0 to Niigata
and to Kashima,
similar to Kashima, and I think Kawasaki as well. They weren't scared to 1 week to be found out, and they didn't panic, and Reysol did that, didn't they? They lost to Jubilo, they lost to Celso, they didn't beat Gamba either game, but they kept playing the same style, and the players knew exactly what to do, and you noticed it. There was a couple of games where Sakai was missing, and because of under-22 duty, and a couple of times Leandro would get the ball in the middle of the park, and it seemed to be looked right to pass it. He's expecting him to be there, and I think Masashima was playing there and wasn't, and it broke them up. They had this continuity. I think that was the key. They didn't veer off the way they wanted to play.
Yeah, you say they signed players like Jorge Akin, but it was only really him and Masashima who came in from Kyoto that were different from the.
He was
from
pathetic at Kyoto last. He was possibly the worst player in a relegated team, but this year it was, you know, I played in Club World Cup.
Yeah.
Which says a lot about the Club World Cup.
we're not getting back into that, but I did pull a stat earlier, which I've written about before, so I remembered it pretty well. But thanks for that. Cesare, they're fiddling with my notes. But they pulled away at the start of the season. They won their first game 3-0 against Espoo. They then won 7 of the first 9, which was only good enough to put away a 4-point lead. But then with the rescheduling of the season in the wake of the earthquake, they ended up with a lot of fixtures home and away against the teams who were going to be in the top half of the season of the table, rather. And then they had a 14 game spell in the middle of the season where they lost 6 times, and that includes the big defeats that we were talking before to Iwata, 3-0 and 6-1, to Cerezo Osaka, 5-0.
Every Cerezo game is 5-0. They either win or lose. It's in their J League contract, I think.
But in that 14 game spell, the other 8 games, they got 22 points. They only dropped 2 points. I mean, they just knew how to win, even when they were having a dodgy spell with difficult fixtures. They either had a disastrous game, or they just won.
Well, you know, it's one thing you say, it's like Nagoya Grampus. Let's look at the contenders. Okay?
Yeah.
Nagoya Grampus, who I think they did better than last year.
Yeah, it was pretty well the same statistics.
They dropped a lot of points in the beginning. They had a lot of injuries. They were messed up by the ACL, and they did their part after that. But and you know, so basically, you know, like as Sean said, you know, the good thing about the race is like they didn't give up. Everybody thought, oh, at a certain point they're going to break down. They're going to get tired. They're going to, you know, like an experience. You know, and you know, it seems a little bit like the penultimate game against Cerezo. They were losing at home.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a classic, you know, in the J League. You see a team that blows it up at the end.
Yeah.
But they held it together. It was a tie was enough to get into the last round with a lead, and they did win it. So I think honestly, kudos to them. I mean,
of course, yeah.
It's very deserved. It's very deserved. Gamba Osaka, I think, was there by chance. Honestly, I mean, okay, they clearly had a few outstanding. You know, some players had a fantastic season. Iguno, of course, you know, the two Brazilians, Adriano and Rafinha, they were very good. Endo, of course, was steady and somewhere in Munich. That's the point, okay. Just like the problem is like from, you know.
Well, Gamba, by whatever means, they got to late summer, early autumn, and suddenly they were top of the table. And, I mean, as you guys know, I tend to go to Gamba games more often than not. And there was never really any sense that this team was really championship material, but yet they were there or thereabouts the whole season.
Yeah,
they were.
Since you just mentioned you go to every game, I was wondering if you could eventually explain me which sort of what is their game plan? Because I asked Endo and he couldn't really answer.
Well, quick list of their results. Some of their results from this season: second game of the season, they lost 4-1 away to Hiroshima, who they then later beat 5-3 at home. They lost 4-3 away to Vanvoorde Corfu, who got relegated. They lost 2-0 at home to them as well. They lost 4-1 at Nagoya, which was perhaps the turning point in those two title contenders' season. But then they had a 4-1 win away at Kashima, 6-3 win at home to Kawasaki. It's a crazy set of results. They ended up with by far the highest goal scoring tally of the.
Yeah, there was like I think a moment where we're like second in the league and they had the second worst defense in the league.
Yeah, they conceded, I think, 51 goals in a 34-game season.
But isn't that why we like this league? Because it is kind of like Almere this year. They had, at one point, they had the best away record out of every club. At the same time, the worst home record. They'd won only once.
Yeah.
They only won twice all season.
All season at home.
At home.
But the last one was the last game of the season. So all season, they had one win at home. All season.
Yeah, they also in the Emperor's Cup, they managed to lose to a university team at home.
Yes.
At home.
Yeah.
So the J League has this, like, there's just every week you go to a game and you, like, I'd say 7-8 times out of 10, you really don't know, like, who's going to win here.
It really is astonishing. You get to the start of each season and, you know, everyone says, oh, we want to do our best, we want to win the league. But in the J League, about half the teams have a realistic chance of winning the league.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when I made my pre-season predictions this year, I had Kashua about 11th, I think, or possibly better if they got off to a good start. I mean, maybe you guys had them higher, but surely you think they're going to win the league.
No, no.
All I can tell is like 2 seasons ago at FC Tokyo as champions.
Yeah.
And they got J2, and you got it right. 2 years ago. That's two some foresight.
That is pretty impressive. But yeah, they were there all season. Nagoya were my tips for the title. I don't know how who did you guys? Well, at the start of the season, who do you think was going to win the league?
Well, just one point I want to make. Yeah. The chat we had with Stokovic and.
Well, this is what I was going to move on to. Yeah, we had the pleasure of bumping into Pixie to Dragan Stojkovic in Toyota the other day.
You just mentioned how this league is very unpredictable and there are ups and downs all the way. What he said is, I'm trying to build a steady team. We're good, we're steady. That's a good thing. In fact, as you just said, the results over the last two seasons were more or less very similar, almost identical.
Yeah. They haven't lost two games in a row for 2 years now.
For 2 years, yeah.
So I think that it has to be seen if what do they do next year? It'd be very interesting. Can it be steady for the third year in a row? Pixie told us he's going to stay to win the title.
Yeah.
And he expect all the players to stay, including Tulio, by the way.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to look forward to next season. Can among all this turmoil that goes on, are we going to have one steady team?
Yeah. Well, he was bemoaning the fact that they had to play in the Asian Champions League, and of course this season was a bit different because we had a 6-7 week gap after the earthquake where the J League stopped, but the Asian Champions League continued, and so Nagoya and Gamba and Cerezo and Kashima were forced to play matches, and he was bemoaning this. They had injuries too, and they only picked up 6 points in the first 6 league games.
Didn't get that complaint this year. I didn't understand it. Normally I get it, like you're playing 2 games a week and everyone's kind of getting for it. I didn't understand why they were complaining. Like, what they were basically saying is, yeah, we're a football club and we're having to play football games every week. I didn't understand, yeah, they have to travel, but come on, they're not travelling like us. They're not in economy class, sat in their pending. They're travelling in business class. They're being taken to the airport in kind of comfy coaches. They're not having to think for themselves.
Actually, Pixie's description was, he said the away game were kind of brutal, the travelling. He said that, they had to wait hours in the airport and then their very long transfer by bus and, no air conditioning. He was really saying that it was rough. But I agree that, it's not the end of the world. I think that, but definitely one thing that made a difference is like for a period they had to play competitive games and other teams didn't. So whatever the outcome, there was a difference. Also, that's the period when they picked up a few injuries.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know, this first part of the season, with the break because of the earthquake was a little eerie overall. I think it's hard to judge.
We don't want
to
make light of the circumstances behind it, of course. But yeah, I mean, if Pixie wants to make this point, then he can say that 6 points from the first 6 games. After which they went on a 16-game unbeaten run, culminating in a 2-2 draw at Gamba Osaka, which took them top, I think, or possibly up to second.
I think maybe they started the season a bit like Santos started the second half against Riso. And I think they lost against Vanfore. I think that was their last defeat before they went on the unbeaten run. And in the press conference afterwards, Pixie was talking about this, and he said, like, I think the players, they're champions, and they think, oh, we're the champions, so we'll be okay. And he said then, but we were champions last season. And speaking to him afterwards in the mix zone, he was speaking kind of less officially. And he was getting to this point, like, he really felt the need to kind of drive into his players that they had to. The reason they won the league the first season was because they'd never won it, and they were working together, and every game they were putting in everything to win the game. And maybe at the start of the season, maybe that was part of it, that they kind of came in thinking, well, we're the champions. Of course, we can beat teams like Vanfore, Kofu.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe after that defeat, that gave them the kick. But by then, like you said, they'd already dropped what?
Yeah, how many points? Well, 12 points in their opening season.
It's a lot.
Then they went on this long unbeaten run all the way through to summer, and it took them top. And I mean, I was convinced then they're going to win the league by 10 points again. I mean, I was absolutely convinced. And then they had a slightly dodgy autumn, or late summer perhaps. They lost to Sendai, to Kashima, and to Shimizu. And then they won their last six, but it wasn't enough because Kashima went on another phenomenal run. They won 9 of their last 11. What can you say? I suppose, just as Pixie said the other day, you have to take your hats off to the champions.